episode of Disrupting Privilege, conversations around race and health. I wanted to introduce my co-host, Dr. Summer Dudney. For those of you who've listened in the past, you know Dr. Dudney is an obstetrics and gynecologist from Rush University Medical Center, who has focused a good portion of her professional energy on disparities impacting Black and Brown women in Chicago. In fact, Dr. Dudney and our guest, today is a unique episode in that both Dr. Dudney and Dr. Nita Lee are members of the Equal Hope Board of Directors. And so we're excited to have both of them. Today, we're going to talk specifically and exclusively about the disparities with cervical cancer diagnosis and treatment. For those of you who know anything about cervical cancer, it is almost 100% preventable if it is addressed early on in life. And Drs. Dudney and Lee discovered sort of in their own individual practices that there was an alarming spike in later stage diagnosis of Black and Brown women here in Chicago, middle-aged women who should not be experiencing later stage diagnosis, and came to Equal Hope and shared with us their findings and asked us to include cervical cancer in the platform of Equal Hope. I also want to take a moment right now to acknowledge the passing of Tricia Lovett. Tricia passed away in November of 2021. Her family reached out to Equal Hope and formed a relationship with us. To Tricia's father and mother, Linda and Mark, who live in Glen Ellen, and to her siblings, Lisa and Marcus, Carrie and Michelle, we send our deepest sympathies for Tricia's passing. Tricia passed away at the age of 48 after being diagnosed at the age of 46, and that is way too young for anyone to die, particularly from something that is close to 100% preventable if addressed early on in life. I'm sure the doctors here will share with you that some countries have actually been able to eliminate cervical cancer as a public health risk, Rwanda being one of the countries that has done so. And certainly if Rwanda can eliminate a health risk, the United States of America should be able to do it as well. So with that said, Dr. Dudney, welcome again as a co-host. And do you want to share a little bit just about your background and then introduce Dr. Lee?
Yeah, absolutely, John. Thank you so much for that introduction. I'm so happy to be here. I am a GYN oncologist at Rush University Medical Center here in Chicago, and my interests definitely lie in health disparities and cervical cancer. And I'm so excited to introduce today Dr. Nita Lee, who is my partner in crime to try to eliminate cervical cancer in Chicago. And so, Nita, do you want to just go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm also a GYN oncologist. And so I think that this has been, both Summer and I are physicians who often see patients who are diagnosed with cervical cancer. And that's sort of at a stage beyond where we think they should be diagnosed. And I think because of our interest in disparities, I work at University of Chicago, both as a GYN oncologist and in our cancer center as our assistant director for community outreach and engagement. And this is a really important topic because of the fact that it is a screenable cancer, it's a preventable cancer. And we kind of see the tail end of it. We see the patients who we really feel like shouldn't be diagnosed. And so this all started with conversations about just our practice and what we thought was really sort of unfair and really ridiculous that we were seeing young women dying of this cancer and being admitted with really significant side effects and just suffering a lot and we felt like we needed to go further back in the way that we can think about prevention, I guess, is how I would think about it.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. We this kind of all started, as John said, Equal Hope originally did a lot of prevention and interventions with breast cancer disparities here in Chicago, if you don't know the history. And we kind of went to Equal Hope with, hey, we should do this for cervical cancer, which is a horribly, disparate disease here in Chicago with affecting Brown and Black women much more significantly than their counterparts. And as Nita said, we are seeing these patients with these advanced cancers, young mothers with kids, and it just over and over in a heavily resourced city as Chicago, And it's heart-wrenching. So we went to them and said, we got to do something about this. This is a cancer that is, we have a vaccine for as a prevention. We have screening for as a prevention. We shouldn't be seeing, you know, women with this diagnosis, especially this advanced stage.
When we were setting up this podcast and talking about it offline, neither you had mentioned something about the SGO and the hashtag Move the Message movement. Do you care to share a little bit about
yeah, that? I mean, I think that, you know, we're both, Summer and I are also members of the Society for GYN Oncology, which is our sort of professional organization that does a lot of professional education and research and support for trainees. And we've really taken on thinking about how we can better share the message and therefore the hashtag Move the Message about women's cancer in general. There's a lot of stigma that's still around, you know, we talk about like below the belt cancer. So a lot of people don't want to talk about, you know, breast cancer, which is a lot more common. Obviously, there's more patients who are survivors, there's more patients out there, there's more patients who've been exposed to the ideas of breast cancer, but GYN cancer, in particular cervix cancer, does not get a lot of as much attention because there is stigma associated with HPV infection, or just people don't like to talk about sort of like more private quote unquote areas. And so I think SGO really wants to kind of move the message about thinking about making sure people are aware about screening for cervical cancer, about HPV vaccine as a cancer vaccine. And so this is sort of part of like, how can we connect better as GYN oncologists to community organizations and other health systems to really just make sure we're all sort of targeted to think about these things. And so obviously in January, we're really excited for the opportunity to think about like where, you know, anyone who's listening to this thinking about like, have you gotten your screen? Are you up to date with your screening? Do you have family members or friends or relatives who may not think that it's relevant to them anymore, or may not think that this is a disease that could affect them? And so I think that's something that we feel really strongly about. I would say, interestingly enough, you know, we have practices in Chicago, and we do see a lot of like women who are potentially under-resourced, under-screened, or not having good follow-up. But I also see women who may actually have insurance and may have these resources, but like don't feel that it applies to them. You know, so the same, there's a lot of different factors that I think can play in. So we really just want to get that message out.
Yeah, I think that I completely agree with everything that Dr. Lee said. It's you know, each cervical cancer diagnosis, really, we should look at it as a tragedy, honestly. It is something that is absolutely preventable. It is something that we can pick up sooner with screening, you know, if we really kind of move the mark on our HPV vaccination rate here in the United States, we would make a much better impact. Other countries, such as John had mentioned, Rwanda, made a giant impact of their HPV vaccination rate and had the majority of their girls in the country vaccinated. And here we can't, you know, we haven't been able to do that. And in a country where they, you know, some areas where they don't have refrigeration, you know, but they still pulled it off. And our, you know, heavily resourced country, we can't, you know, we're still struggling with these kind of issues. Australia has a goal. The World Health Organization also came out with a goal to, you know, vaccinate women, do screening, or and kind of make this impact worldwide of the goal of eliminating cervical cancer. And we really need to make that front and center here in the United States.
It's fascinating to me, as I mean, I'm a father of a 26-year-old son, but I know growing up, you know, I'd heard parents, particularly parents of young women, who were concerned about sexual activity. And, you know, I mean, I don't have a daughter, so I didn't have to think about those things, but I did have a son and I was worried. And I said, since when does since when a vaccine makes somebody more sexually active? It's an irrational thought that somehow, you know, again, cancer's below the belt or health below the belt, but, you know, addressing or trying to prevent cancer would lead to some form of promiscuity. So how do you address that, or how do you confront that when you're talking to patients?
So I think that one of the things that I would say to patients, one, it's actually, we've studied that. We've studied the issue. So one, it's been proven through, looking at different studies and inquiring about patients, looking at sexual activity. So it absolutely has been proven scientifically that it doesn't increase, sexual activity in young girls. Two, you're protecting your children with vaccinations, with all sorts of other diseases, right? In their life, they need vaccinations to go to school. And really, this is just another one. I wouldn't look at it as a preventing a sexual transmittable disease, but I would look at it as a cancer vaccination. And that's really how we have to start talking about this. If you want your kid not to get cancer, this is a good thing. And it's not just a cervical cancer. It's the throat cancers, anal cancer. Right. It prevents against a bunch of different cancers. And I just don't see how you would not want to vaccinate your kid for cancer.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's a really hard topic because when we think of it, we think of all the cancer prevention, but there is, as we've seen with all of the stuff with COVID and everything, there's a lot of like vaccine hesitancy. And I think that unfortunately, that was, like you said, how the HPV vaccine got rolled out in the US compared to other places where countries were like, oh, great, you have a cancer vaccine. We'll just make it that everybody who's 12 gets it, right? And so now 20 years later, they're seeing these dramatic decreases in pre-cancer and actually cervix cancer. And we're not, because our rates are probably in the 50% range, right? So I think it does have a lot to do with like how people talked about it and how HPV was mentioned. And although there have been studies that show that it did not actually increase the age of when boys and girls started having sex, it did not increase the number of partners. So like all of those studies have been done, but there is just still this, it's also kind of like provider education. Cause I think, not to say that we would want to blame a group of providers. I think when HPV vaccine was first rolled out, even though it was rolled out with the idea that like this should be something recommended, it was not necessarily like offered in the same way initially. So it was sort of like, oh yeah, you definitely need measles, you definitely need mumps, you need this, you need, but if you want to, you could also get the HPV vaccine. And so there was kind of a lot of like messaging that I don't think was as cohesive as it could be. And now we really want people to say like, kids in preteen kids just get the vaccine routinely 9 to 26, and now up to age 45, men and women are really recommended to get it. So we're really pushing it in a good way.
I am not on the front lines by any stretch of the imagination, but I have had conversations with people, and I boils down to, I say, this is a matter of life or death. Do you want to prevent a potential source of death for your child? Of course, any parent would say yes. And okay, well, this is one way to do it. It's a simple thing to do. There's no risk. And, Americans in general are kind of weird about sex. And so we can conflate and confuse all kinds of messages and images. And I don't see that we're ever going to fix that. But certainly we can address the disparities with cervical cancer and the preventative measures to take for it.
Yeah. And just to, for parents out there, your kids are getting, the Hep B vaccine when they're young, which is a vaccine that is a sexually transmitted disease. So you're already doing it. Like it's already happening. You're already making that prevention. Right. And it's not necessarily a giant leap for the next, another cancer vaccine. And vaccines, obviously if we were in the world of hesitancy and lots of vaccine talk and things like that. But, again, this is, if someone said, hey, do you want a cancer vaccine? I mean, yes, like, right. We all would want that. It's been proven to be safe. It's proven to decrease. We're actually starting to use this vaccine for patients who develop precancers. If they haven't had the vaccine, we can give it and decrease the risk of recurrence of these precancers, which would just, studies have just kind of started coming out on this. So, there's so much to be done and so much, positive things that we can do to increase our vaccination rate.
Yeah.
I wonder, I don't think I mentioned Dr. Lee is with UChicago Medicine. And so I wonder if you see any differences between your South Side Hospital with UChicago and your West Side Hospital at Rush. Do you see differences in sort of attitudes or differences in perspectives on this?
I don't think so. I think that we've shared that we often have a lot of similar patients who are, you know, all want to be healthy and want to do the right thing, but there are a lot of like competing priorities a lot of mm-hmm. times. And so mm-hmm. I think this is where some of our, you know, work with Equal Hope and our real, like, you know, why we're so excited to be able to like be a part of this is because, you know, a lot of patients, you know, getting screening and getting follow-up and making sure they're getting the right care, there's a lot of things that can compete with them being able to do that, whether it's insurance status or transportation or childcare or fear or, you know, like trauma, a history of trauma, like pelvic exams can be very difficult for patients. Like all of those things, I think, are sort of citywide, I guess I would say, and are probably exaggerated because we know that the cervical cancer incidence rates is higher in African-American women and Hispanic women compared to white women. Though we know that Asian-American women or Asian women, especially immigrant women, may be less screened too. So it's sort of a like, you know, everything is kind of a range, but I don't know if there's a huge difference between West Side and South Side in that respect.
Yeah, I would agree, Nathan. I think that we have similar patient populations. I mean, both of our institutions provide care to lower socioeconomic and higher socioeconomic, et cetera. The one thing is that I do travel, I have an outreach clinic about an hour south. In Bourbonnais, Kankakee area. And these rural areas too, that's where there's a significant population of cervical cancers. And those are mostly underscreened. You know, people lose their insurance, that kind of, so it's not just obviously an urban problem. It is a rural problem too, definitely. And that comes from obviously lots of other issues with you know, healthcare in general and healthcare disparities in rural areas.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And that is often like irrespective of race and ethnicity. I mean, obviously the race and ethnicity stuff in the Chicago area is probably due to kind of like years of systemic racism and like the, you know, like the economic differences between different locations. But I completely agree that there are a lot of subpopulations that are missing screening or missing vaccine or missing both or missing follow-up. And it's just trying to kind of think about like how we get that net across for wherever we can catch people, right? Like whether it's like, can we get the young age and screened and vaccinated? And then at 21, when we start screening, are people getting screening? Do they even know what their results are? So that it just ends up being like a lot of different like places that we can see the gaps. I think people talk about that like Swiss cheese model of like, why does this bad outcome happen? Right. I think people talked about it. They were kind of showing that again during COVID times of like, you know, what did you miss? Or, you know, and people do that for a lot of different disease sites, but cervix cancer in the Chicagoland area is probably like a great example of that too. Like, what are all of these like missed opportunities essentially?
You had said something earlier, Nita, that struck me, and I don't know that you intend this to be sort of a highlight or a bullet point, but competing priorities. And I think, you know, there's probably an entire episode or two or three episodes on how different segments of our society have competing priorities. And it's one thing to be, you know, a mother in Oak Park or a mother in, you know, Wilmette, and you know, you have challenges and like everyone else. But you have more resources, both sort of financial as well as societal, you know, infrastructure at your disposal. And when you have, you know, limited resources and you're using public transportation to get to work and you're working two jobs to try to keep a roof over your kids' heads. And, you know, I get that to break that sort of mindset to say, here's something that you really should lift up. Is important. And I don't, I mean, this is probably a larger cultural discussion, but how do we elevate this? And so I think what you are both doing by helping to bring this to the fore is incredibly important.
Yeah, I think we can make an impact, you know, at those places in life, right? So looking at where we're losing people, how can we come to the mom who has to take public transportation? How can we make that easier for screening? But ultimately, if we want to get really into prevention, that prevention is going to be much earlier, right? So if she has gotten the HPV vaccine, If we would have made the intervention when age 10, 11, 12, right? And that's the intervention, right? That's where we can, you want to kind of as early as possible, so she's as protected as possible. Not to say that you can't have screening, not doing screening is not a good thing, but it's also, if we can prevent way earlier in life, we would be lifting everyone up, honestly, and even though the sound of this is always controversial, but to have like a, school, there are states in the United States where you have you have to have the HPV vaccine. I think there's 4 states now, to go to school. So, why can't we do that in Illinois? Why are those kids in those other states, have this benefit and ours don't? That's kind of how I would look at it. But I understand, any sort of school vaccine can be controversial, at least new ones, but we sort of accept everything that's already there, and why not add a cancer vaccine to help lift up these kids so that they have that prevention and for their whole life.
I remember having that conversation with our son's pediatrician, and we talked about, he's not going to have cervical cancer, but he could have anal cancer, he could have, throat cancer. And so we were on board immediately, but, we had the time and energy to spend and talk about those things access to the educational resources. I mean, I wouldn't have known squat. I wouldn't have known, how to address that or that it was a concern, but for the preventative care that my son's pediatrician shared or provided to us.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I do think that. I mean, I think that's been the really fun thing. I mean, it just kind of makes me think about one of the great things about our what we've been able to do in Chicago and to have these discussions has been really with the group that we've been able to bring together under, Equal Cervical Care. I know we've kind of called it like a working group or a consortium, but I think like multiple institutions and like multiple types of physicians and nurses and care providers are really interested in the HPV vaccine. So, one of our, team members is, the director of immunization for Chicago Department of Public Health. And she is fantastic because she's a pediatric ICU person, really can lead us, Dr. Frischone in there, or, from UIC, our other colleagues in the med peds department, who can really, provide that guidance for their specialty as well. So we're really trying to like tackle it and promote that type of like what your pediatrician did for you, for all of the providers, those kinds of things. So.
Yeah. And I would just want to add on to the committee that we have, or the working group that Neetha was talking about, that we co-chair for under Equal Hope for, the elimination of cervical cancer. It's so impressive the amount of people that want to help. So other GYN oncologists like Neetha and I from multiple other institutions all over the city, everyone puts their time in. We have nurses, everyone sees this. If you're in healthcare and you're in this field, you see this as a problem and you see this as something that can be, we can stop it. We can do something. And everyone is very interested and it's so great to see everyone volunteering their time to do this. And, it makes me really excited about the future.
It's one of the things that's unique about Chicago. And I've said this before, I don't know if you've heard me talk about it, but I think Chicago has a unique philanthropic culture, or the fabric of the philanthropic fabric of the city is somewhat unique. And people are very committed to the common good and to the well-being of Chicagoans. And, I grew up in Atlantic City, New Jersey. So I was close to Philadelphia. I went to school close to New York. And they have terrific philanthropic communities as well. But I think there's something really unique about Chicago in that there is a fully engaged public sector or private sector, I should say, that is interested in and participates in philanthropic efforts. And so we have a unique opportunity in the city. We have unique challenges. There's no question whatsoever. But certainly when the right message is out there, Chicagoans will stand up and support it. Well, with that said, I want to thank both of you. Is there anything, Dr. Lee or Dr. Dooney, you'd care to share with our audience as we kind of wrap up here?
I mean, I think the only thing I would say would be like, just to kind of like hone in a little bit on like the areas that we're really focusing in on and like the target areas, so that people are kind of like clear on like what people could do in their own in their own cities or their own like smaller towns. I think it's, you know, we've kind of broken up what the work that this, our group does, you know, obviously there's the education and the social media efforts and like kind of all of those kinds of things. There's the navigation and the education of navigators so that they're educated about what cervix cancer is and screening and vaccine. So there's that element of it. There's the HPV vaccine push. There's also sort of the quality push of really making sure when once people are getting screened, the checkbox isn't just like, did you get your pap smear? But like, what's the system in place for you getting your results and getting navigated? And so that's where Equal Hope Navigators come in. And so that's like all of these little things we've turned into these working groups because those are where we see the problem areas. And then, you know, as Dr. Judy mentioned as well, like some of our radiation oncologists who treat cervical cancer that is too far gone for us to be able to operate on are really interested in this as well. And to get this like link between public health and like radiation oncologist, and you know, it is really very fascinating. And they're really interested in like the quality of the care that women who are diagnosed with cervical cancer get, right? So we're sort of like really seeing this like really nice how all of these things are kind of linked, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's been a really exciting way to think about programming, both in terms of like education, as well as research ideas and thinking of like ways to get more, like you said, more support for all of this to get done.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's more than just getting a pap smear, but it's the continuum of care that follows. What's your follow-up?
Yes, exactly. That's a great way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's really a really important message for people to hear. So thank you for that.
Yeah, and I would just echo what Neetha said. I mean, I think that we, you know, if you are listening, you want to get involved, obviously, you know, you can always come to the Equal Hope website, or if you obviously live outside of Chicago, there's always organizations that are trying to do these sites of these kind of thing. But I think the biggest thing, if you know, tell your friends and family, you know, there's a cancer vaccine that get your pap smear. Those are the two big things like just kind of that will make an impact.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank both of you for being here and taking the time. For our audience, if you have listened to Disrupting Privilege in the past and have not subscribed, please, wherever you get your podcast, whether it's through Apple or through Spotify or iHeartRadio or wherever, please subscribe to us so that every time we release a new episode, you'll get notice of it. We want to thank you for making the time today. Dr. Lee and Dr. Dooney, thanks so much for taking the time this afternoon. We appreciate it, and we look forward to another episode coming very soon. Good afternoon, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.